Is it getting hot in here, or is it just magma? This week we cover the origins of Volvo, what would have happened if Ford and Chrysler merged in the 80s, and get stoked on the debuts of the Mazda Speed 3, Grand Cherokee Trackhawk, and the ID. Buzz. Plus, our first fan mail. All that and more coming your way right now.
It's time to cruise the highways and byways of the auto industry's past, present, and future. Join us in exploring the vehicles, people, events, and places that have shaped the way we move. This is the Drive History Podcast.
Welcome to the Drive History Podcast. This is Brian Corey, joined as always by Jordan Stead.
What's going on, my friends? Hello, hello.
This episode, we are covering the week of April 9th through the 15th. Is anything happening in your life during those days, Jordan?
Nothing but changes on the wind right now.
I feel like there's a lot happening coming up.
Yes. We got plans for the show, y'all. We've been talking about it. We've been scheming. We're almost in the double digits.
Remix.
We're almost in the double digits here. This is episode nine. And Brian and I were talking, and we were saying, look, it's cool. We're having fun. We like this format. But it's time to mix it up a little bit. We're going to try some new things. We're going to remix some things. We're going to be bringing on some guests. We got all sorts of stuff coming up here in the next number of episodes. But we're going to kind of soft launch some stuff today. Similar format, but with a couple of extra pops of color here and there.
Twists and turns. Oh, speaking of color.
Oh.
I hear you like orange.
Oh, man. Well, so here's how we're mixing it up at first. We're going to talk about one major piece of automotive news for the week or recently on the podcast. And there is only one thing to be talking about right now. And it is the color orange. And it is Genesis Magma.
Oof.
If you're not prepared to listen to 2 hours of me talking about the Genesis Magma, turn off this podcast right now. Just kidding. Don't turn off the podcast. Yeah. If you haven't heard,
you have
Genesis,
1.5 minutes.
Exactly. Okay, 1.5 minutes. Fair. You got to put a timer on it for me. I got it. Genesis is rolling out a performance line, allegedly, because it's still a concept line, of cars called Genesis Magma.
For those unfamiliar, Genesis is Hyundai's luxury brand, which started just as the Hyundai Genesis in about 2008.
Yes, it's kind of confusing, but it's definitely one of those spinoffs that you would have thought would have died by now, but they just persevered.
It's hotter and hotter and hotter.
Brian's coming with the jokes tonight. Yes, it is getting hotter, but the reality of it is one, if you haven't seen some of the new Genesis designs of the past, I think maybe 1 or 2 years, the G70, G80, GV70, G80, in my opinion, my favorite stock car automotive designs in the longest time. If you haven't seen them in person, stunning. If you haven't seen them online,
it's true.
Go look them up right now. Incredible. Beautiful designs.
Still not sponsored by Genesis.
Not yet. But hopefully with this Magma rollout, we're going to be getting some free press cars from Genesis. Yeah. No, I don't know. We'll see. Genesis, holler. Anyway,
it's true though. What they're doing is really interesting. I feel like it's, I mean, we'll talk about this a little later. The in-house brands, the spinoffs, the hot takes that you're going to give us on those brands. But we're starting right here with the Magma. And I'm kind of curious what you think of the name in general.
Yes. Okay. So
starting really 30,000 foot level.
Yeah.
Magma.
30,000 foot level. Magma, like, seems kind of cool. I think about a couple things. I think about Dr. Evil. Magma. Mm. Okay. It's the first thing I think about. And then I think about two. Okay. All the cars, by the way, have debuted in bright orange, which is also one of my favorite colors for cars, especially performance cars. So I love that part. The third part that's a little bit sus is that Magma is hot, but it's very slow. Typically, right? Mm. It's like kind of this slow, goopy thing.
Yeah, right.
I would imagine most of the time.
Eats everything in its path, but at a
I guess.
Very slow rate, yes, indeed.
But from their website, Genesis says, Genesis Magma presents an exciting opportunity to push the boundaries of performance and luxury for new interpretations in high performance vehicles. Genesis will continue to reveal attempts and experimental concepts with careful consideration of both technological and aesthetic elements. And basically what they've done is they've made a performance variant of the four different vehicles in their current fleet, which is essentially an SUV, a sedan, actually a concept like coupe style roadster car, and one other one.
I mean, that one is just so eye-catching. Like when you check out the website and you see that sleek little roadster, it is unbelievable. It is a car out of a video game from like 1995 with the proper graphics to display correctly in 2025 and beyond.
Yeah, it's unreal. Apparently, keep in mind, all this stuff is still concept. But the first thing that I was wondering about is, are they electric or are they ICE? And TBD, but on the new concept coupe thing, which they're calling the X Grand Berlinetta, it's powered by a front...
Wait. I just, before we go any further, yeah. I hope you know that there was a Buick Berlinetta.
Why'd you have to ruin this?
In the 80s.
Yes. And hopefully they didn't base it on that. But anyway, apparently this thing is going to be powered by a front mid-engined V6 that's electrically assisted, that tops out at 1,071 horsepower and something like 900-something torque, and it tops out at 10,000 RPM. So we're talking like F1 engine tech going on here.
The language that they use is really interesting to me because they call it a front mid-mounted V6 that's electrically assisted tech. They don't call it a hybrid. So I'm curious, like, what is happening here mechanically, internally.
So I've heard some talk about this across the auto industry, which is there's kind of two schools of thought, which is a hybrid car. If you brand something as a hybrid car, what does your mind instantly go to?
Fuel efficiency.
Okay. And Prius, right?
Oh.
Everyone's imagining this 2007 Prius. Oh, we're here to save gas. Okay, that's cool. That is one bucket. That's a big like group of buyers. Sure. But on the other side, there's a whole other bucket of hybrid technology is not green at all, and the intention is not to save gas. It's to make shit faster.
Well, let's be honest. That is exactly what Dodge was trying to do with their rollout video of their new Charger.
Yes.
And I know how much you loved that.
That's in the last episode. If you haven't seen the new Dodge Charger electric rollout video, go look at it right now, and be sure that you have space to laugh openly and loudly
and question everything you've ever done.
True. But I'm telling you right now, Genesis Magma, if it comes true, I'm gonna scream. I'm gonna bail out all of my bank accounts. I'm gonna buy one of them, all of them, whatever. Incredible. Like some of the most beautiful stock cars that I've seen in the longest time. True. Color choice is incredible. Even the wheel tire package looks so meaty boy, thick boy, racy, tracky. It just, they're so beautiful, and they're made even more beautiful with this whole Magma idea.
Are you excited?
No, not at all.
Okay.
Yeah.
Well, I'm glad we got that sorted out. No, it is cool. It's great to have just more options on the marketplace and just to see where car technology is going and design and performance. And honestly, to have this come out of a Hyundai brand is awesome because it really shows that anything is kind of possible in the auto industry at this point.
Yep. Yep. Good times are upon us, strangely. Even though it kind of doesn't feel like it sometimes, I feel like we're in a pretty sweet spot.
Truth.
You just have to have a shitload of money.
That is true also.
Yeah, that's the downside.
Lucky for me.
That's right. Thanks to you, loyal listeners. Yeah. We appreciate this influx of cash.
Yeah, that Venmo is looking real, real happy right now.
Thanks. Yeah, what is the Venmo? Plug it.
At Automotive History.
Love it.
Speaking of like connecting, if you have thoughts, ideas, questions, comments, I'll even listen to your concerns. Hit us up at contact@carsandcopymedia.com. You can also find us on Facebook at Automotive History, Instagram at This Day in Automotive History, You can bug Jordan on his personal Instagram account at Jordan B. Stead or myself at Spare Change Multimedia. Above all, please just hit that follow button, subscribe wherever you listen to podcasts. We're really trying to drive this home and make it a fun and interesting podcast for all.
And share. That's the real thing, you know?
Sharing is caring.
Sharing is really, truly caring, especially in this age of weird algorithms and who knows what's going on. So please, text your buddy.
Weird algorithms? Like, come on.
Oh, man. Oh,
knock off Weird Al.
It's a Weird Al cover band. Love it. Wow. Anyway, please share, like, subscribe, all the things that the overlords want you to do, and we also want you to do. We would appreciate it.
Truth. And with that, we're going to dive into our automotive history section. And you may notice that it's a little more expedited, a little more compact, and that is by design. So let's get to it. April 9th, 2009, the Nissan Nismo 370Z makes its press debut at the New York Auto Show. This is the in-house performance division variation, and it's 7 inches longer than its stock counterpart of just the regular 370Z coupe, despite having the same wheelbase, which I thought was pretty interesting. That's a big body kit.
That is enormous. Also, 7 inches longer or wider?
Longer. It's actually narrower, but it was only by 0.2 inches narrower, which is really...
I don't get it. What 7 inches is so long.
So long.
That's like the difference between like a maybe even like a what? Like a maybe a BMW 3 Series and a 5 Series? True. That's like a really different car.
I think a lot of it was in that front lip.
Mm.
Looking at it, but...
They do look cool. I do love that front on the 370 Nismo.
It's so sick. But it is interesting. I don't know where they shaved 0.2 inches off of the set to make it narrower.
Yeah.
It did gain a lot of weight. Forgot to write down the specs on that. But... It came equipped with the 350 horsepower V6, which is 18 horsepower more than the stock 370Z. And everyone came with a 6-speed manual. There was no automatic option.
That's cool.
I super appreciate. Other upgrades for it included 19-inch raised forged wheels, yes. Yokohama tires, vented rotors spinning under Nismo sport brakes with 4-piston front and 2-piston rear aluminum calipers. Like, this was a well-designed performance vehicle, especially for 2009. It was the second year, I think, of the 370. So they were onward and upward.
We've briefly talked about this in the past. I think I like the 370 more than the 350. But my problem with both still is that I feel like once you hit the top of the wheel... downward.
Oh, right.
The car looks like it stopped getting designed.
That's interesting.
It just looks flat and bulbous and weird, except this 370 Nismo front facelift for this, I think, helped a lot for this particular car.
Where are we now on the Z spectrum?
I'm glad you asked. Well, the new Z just came out, which is... people are referring to as the 400Z, which it's actually not called, but just for nomenclature's sake, it's making it easier for people to understand where we've been and where we've gotten to. The new Z came out. There is a new Nismo edition of it. It's automatic only, but the non-Nismo edition of the new Z can be had in both automatic or manual.
That's so interesting.
Now, here's the thing. The new Z... is allegedly, and probably factually, I don't know exactly personally, but the new Z, the 400Z, which it's not called.
So it's just Nissan Z.
Nissan Z. And it's kind of bringing back all these different chunks of history, like way back Datsun days, all these cool elements. The thing that I've read of the automotive journalists saying and the reviews are basically that it's a cool car, it feels good, it's new, it's fun, it's fast, still twin turbo V6 situation, is that it's still like 80 something percent 370Z. So it's kind of like a reskin 370Z with some new upgrades. And hey, I mean, that's cool. I've never actually driven any of these cars. I've always kind of wanted to. I've never actually wanted to own one though. But I do like the new Z, but apparently there are like a lot of 370 under the skin.
Do you feel like when the 350Z came out, I think it was like 2000, 2004-ish?
Maybe even earlier. Oh, three maybe? Three,
yeah.
Yeah.
I mean, that was that same era of all these retro cars. And you and I were just talking about this earlier today, how that era was kind of defined by these retro vehicles. Do you think the Z design of that time was retro or was it modern?
I think the new Z is far more retro designed. They did a really nice job with the new Z of combining all these different eras of Nissan Z. Whereas the 350 and the 370 to me was kind of like a net new thing. But when you see a 350 or you see a 370 on the road today, it's so clearly a early 2000s design.
Yeah.
Not in a bad way, right. But it's like very much of that era, much like a lot of that kind of...
It's a little bulbous and it's all around, but it's like got that like flair for something that came before it.
Right. It's like, you can tell they were trying really hard to make something cool for 2006.
Yeah. So true.
Yeah.
Cool. Jumping ahead to April 10th, 1978, the first U.S. built Volkswagen leaves a Pennsylvania assembly line. Really interesting to me. It took about 30 years for Volkswagen, once it kind of started maximizing production, to come to the U.S. And it was one of the last like major players in the import industry to build a U.S. factory. And like that excludes BMW and Mercedes and like those luxury brands until recently. But like Honda, I think Subaru did, Nissan, like they were all in the U.S. before this. And so it was a huge step for Volkswagen. And by this time, they were already one of the like top selling cars in the world. So a little late jump for them. But
what car was it? Do we know? I'm assuming.
I'm sure by 78, well, they were still producing the Beetle for about another couple of years, the Volkswagen van, but they were also doing the, oh, I forget the name of them. Maybe like the Scirocco was about to come out, and there was a station wagon variant.
Okay.
And I think the Rabbit was also right about this time. That was 79.
Cool.
Yeah. April 10th, 1981, Henry Ford II, the grandson of Henry Ford, rejects an offer to merge Ford and Chrysler, an offer that came from Lee Iacocca, who had been fired by Henry Ford II just a few years before and ultimately ended up as the CEO of Chrysler. It's just so crazy to think about a world where those two brands are under the same roof.
Yeah, that's true. I didn't really think about it. Yeah, that's true. Imagine.
Right?
What do you think would have existed? And what do you think would have not existed? Like right off the top of your head, what would have won out over if they would have merged?
I think what would have happened is a lot more family hauler type vehicles. Mm. One thing that I know for a fact that Lee Iacocca brought from Ford to Chrysler was the minivan idea. And that essentially saved Chrysler in the early 1980s.
Right. Yeah, that makes sense.
That and the K car. And, you know, Ford, General Motors, they all kind of played catch up in that field. Well, wouldn't that happen? Man, I mean, in the 1980s, I feel like performance was just like out the door. Like nobody was trying to go fast anymore.
Gas crisis.
Right. So maybe there would have been a little more experimentation with the Mustang or something like that.
Mm-hmm.
But because they were doing those like not very powerful Shelby Chrysler vehicles in the mid-1980s. And so would there have been a Shelby Ford like reunion, perhaps? Who knows?
Weird. I'm surprised that hasn't been like a revised history movie yet. Someone hasn't made a movie of like if that had happened.
It's like Man in the High Castle, but the auto industry.
There it is. By the way, trademarked. Trademarked. Don't take it. I own it.
Yeah. I'm writing the script right now. April 11th, 1970, the Saab Sonnet 3 debuts. This is the original Saab Sonnet debuted in 1955. It was its first sports car. The Saab Sonnet 2 debuted in 1966. And then this third iteration landed in 1970. It featured a German-built 1500cc Ford Taunus V4, which I thought was really interesting.
I thought you were going to say Taurus.
That's what I was reading it like that for a while, but a few years before the Taurus came out, unfortunately.
Mm-hmm.
So this sports car had 65 horsepower and a top speed of 99 miles per hour. I'm not sure if you've seen one of these vehicles. They're actually really beautiful.
I haven't, but the name is ringing a bell.
Yeah, I mean, it's like a pre-wedge car.
Almost. Oh, cool. Okay.
Yeah. And they're rare, too. Only 8,368 of the Saab Sonnet 3s were built between 1970 and 1974. So if you see one, snag one.
I foresee myself in a alternate universe being a Saab owner. I've come close a couple times. Although growing up, my neighbor had one and I hated it. I hated the name. I hate the name Saab.
It's what a terrible Saab story.
It's a Saab story. I don't like Saab. Like, I don't know. There's just so many elements of it that I don't like. I hate the name and it's very frumpy. Like, the whole brand to me is very frumpy.
Too many vowels.
Yeah, I don't know. But there are some cool Saabs out there for sure.
Totally.
The Arrow. All this, yeah, there's some cool stuff in there.
What were we just, the Volvo. Yeah. I always confuse Volvo and
they're kind of the same to me in my head, too. Yeah.
They're Swede.
That's right.
April 12th, 2006, the Mazda Speed 3 makes its North American debut. This is the in-house performance version of the Mazda 3. Features a 263 horsepower turbo 2.3 inline 4 and a 6-speed manual transmission. Again, no automatic option available. Yes. Hard to imagine today. This car landed on Car and Driver's top 10 list for 2007, 8, and 2010. I wanted to ask you about these, like, because we already talked about the Nismo 370. Mm-hmm. Now we got the Mazda Speed 3. What do you think about in-house performance brands? Do you have a list of your top three, perhaps? Give us your hot take.
Oof. Hot take, love it. Okay, I'm going to say them really fast. Then I want to talk about the Mazda Speed 3 for a second, and I'll come back to my three in-house performance brands. Okay, my three are Audi Sport, AMG, and M, but with an honorable mention to the N.
Oh, yeah.
So I'm going to come back to that in a second. The Mazda Speed 3 is the car that I'm shocked I never bought.
Interesting.
Our good friend Carrie, who will, I promise you, appear on this
Carrie,
on the show.
Get your butt down here.
Actually, he's going to be here tomorrow.
Carrie, we're recording tomorrow.
True. Maybe we'll see what happens here. Anyway, Carrie, our good friend, amazing dude and car aficionado, loves the Mazda Speed 3. And we love cars like this because they're cheap, they're fun. They're fast, they're stupid, and they shouldn't exist. And the Mazda Speed 3 to me is totally a car that I'm surprised I haven't owned yet. And even though I haven't driven one, feels very similar to the Fiat 500 Abarth that I owned. Overpowered four banger turbo.
Abarth is another front wheel drive. Abarth isn't really in house, is it?
I feel like these days you could say that it is. I think it is. It is. It's like part of the namesake. There was a time in history when it wasn't.
Right.
But now it's part of the brand.
Okay.
But I'm surprised I haven't owned one of these. I've heard great things, honestly, especially if you like torque steer. I mean, that's just like, that's the name of the game with the Mazda Speed 3. But people have built some crazy stuff on this platform over the years. If you do some YouTube hunting and diving, but such a fun, stupid, and very happy, smiling looking car from the front. And I've always kind of wanted to drive one or own one.
Is it something that's hard to come by?
I don't think they're hard to come by, but I do think they're probably hard now to find one that hasn't been absolutely boosted to fuck and beaten to death at this point.
Yeah, fair.
I mean, like, nobody accidentally buys the Mazda Speed 3.
Right.
You know, because you can buy a Mazda 3 and you're good, but you really have to be like, I'm going to kill this thing with fire if you're going to buy a Mazda Speed 3.
Fast and the Furious.
Yeah, although it was never present in those movies. It was never, yeah. I mean, same with the Mazda Speed Miata, which actually, like, a lot of people don't like and don't think is a great Miata. But anyway,
I just have to shout out really quick. Had somebody, Adrian Ma, he wrote an article for automotivehistory.org about Mazda's in-house brand M2, which was building, you know, kind of bespoke Miatas and other models in the mid and early 90s.
Cool.
If you haven't checked it out, go on the website, search for Mazda M2.
I've never even heard of that. I'm going to go check it
out. That's what I didn't know either. And he busted out this awesome article about all these crazy cars I'd never even heard of. And they're very hard to come by. And it was Mazda's, like, it was pre-Mazda Speed.
Okay.
Like, in-house division.
A little pilot program for Mazda Speed, maybe?
Yeah.
By the way, Mazda Speed is, it's kind of a miracle it even existed. Like, it was a long shot, and it only existed for a while, and then that was it. So it's a miracle that we have these things.
Well, keep them in your garage.
Totally. By the way, I owned a Mazda 6 that I bought off my mom in, like, 2000. I think it was a 2006 Mazda 6. And I fucking hated that car. God, I hated it. I hated everything about it. And so because of that, I feel like maybe I would hate this. But even though they're very different cars, I don't know. There's something about it. I just have this bad taste in my mouth in that car.
I got to say, though, I appreciate Mazda styling. I feel like they do something different than a lot of other car companies to make themselves look like their own car.
Yep. And timeless. Nothing really looks particularly aged for me from Mazda.
Truth.
It always looks pretty damn good.
Truth.
Anyway, back to this in-house performance brand. Audi Sport. Look, you're going to hear me talk about it forever. I love Audis. I don't know why. I haven't even driven an Audi for real in my life. I just love this in my mind, the idea of what an Audi is, which is this brutish gentleman's car. It's luxurious when you want it to be. It's aggressive when you want it to be. It looks cool as shit all the time. It's also one of my favorite automotive just design languages ever. I think they're timeless in their design, almost every model. So I got to give it to the RS line of Audi sport cars. Like, you just can't go wrong. AMG, again, I don't think I've ever driven an AMG vehicle. Similar kind of ethos, though, right? Like, this luxurious thing.
Just appreciate it.
Fast, come on. Loud.
Give me a wagon.
I know, yeah, that E63 S wagon, my God. And then I have driven an M car, like I was talking about on a former episode, an M4, really enjoyed it. I think the car that I probably will end up buying eventually is an M2, maybe the first gen of M2.
Showing me one of those the other day.
I know, it's still there, it's for sale, it's like 2 miles away, it's for sale right now. It's in that beautiful watery blue color that I love the most. I know, it's a manual, it's beautiful. So who knows? Probably we'll own an M2 eventually. But then shout out the N division at Hyundai. Hyundai,
yeah.
We drove.
Not me.
No. Not we. That was Carrie. Carrie and I. Shout out Carrie again. We rented an Elantra N, the new Elantra N on Turo.
Well, we saw one today driving down the street.
We did, in that cool blue. Mm-hmm. And that thing was awesome. So much fun.
I can see that.
Sounded cool. Talk about a performance bargain. It was a manual.
Right.
It was great.
Honestly, that seems like a fun car that you can buy and convince the rest of your family members that it's a smart investment because it's got four doors,
totally.
But it's still good to drive.
And I almost bought a new Veloster N when they came out. Loved them. And I also weirdly am intrigued by this Kona N, which is their little SUV.
Dude, I could get into that.
Yeah.
I could get real into that.
I did test drive a regular Kona N with the 1.6 turbo in it. And I was surprised by how torquey and fun and fast it was, but it was too small. It wouldn't have fit like a dog super well for me. And it was like doing all the things I want a car to do, but none of the things that I'm buying an SUV to do.
Sure.
Well, yeah.
I test drive a Hyundai Elantra hybrid.
Yeah,
there 55 you go. Miles per gallon. And that's all I need.
I'm not going to yuck your yum, man. These are good things to have.
But honestly, I mean, going back to Genesis, but Hyundai is doing really interesting things. Props.
Magma.
April 12th, 2020. Sterling Moss passes away. While he's best known for his antics as one of the best British Formula One drivers, he won 212 of the 529 races he entered ever across a variety of motorsports. And that includes F1 and, the 24 Hour of Le Mans, 12 Hours of Daytona, and a variety of other endurance racing. However, despite his success, he earned the he's known as the greatest driver to never win the Formula One World Championship. But in a 7-year span between 55 and 1961, he finished second place 4 times and third place 3 times. So close, but so far away. What's cool is his first F1 win was at the 1955 British Grand Prix, and he was the first British driver to win that race.
Dang. Repping for the home team. Nice. Yeah.
And also, I need to correct myself, it's actually Sir.
Oh,
Stirling Moss.
Important.
Yeah. April 13th, 1969, the Dodge Charger Daytona debuts. This car, if you're probably familiar, it's big wing on the back, huge nose cone, but it demonstrated just how far American car companies were willing to go to win on the NASCAR track. And for homologation purposes, Dodge had to build 500 of these and resulted in only 503 being built so that it would qualify for NASCAR. Many of them are still accounted for, and they're extremely collectible, and I've always wanted one. I'm more of a fan of the Plymouth Superbird, which kind of was the copycat version that came out the next year.
Let's talk money here. How much do they
go
for?
I would say between $300,000 to $700,000, depending on the condition and the powertrain options.
Okay.
What's cool is that it was built specifically for NASCAR, and it actually won the very first top-tier NASCAR race. It was in the 1969 Talladega 500, which was the first Talladega race. So thank you, Will Ferrell, for Talladega Nights.
Yeah, truthfully.
And that car still lives on a little bit. There's always, well, the Charger's coming back, right? We'll see if they have a Daytona version.
I think they already do. I think that's already slated for a trim. Okay. Of course
there is.
There's always been a Daytona trim.
Yeah.
Yeah.
April 14th, 1927, the first production Volvo left the assembly line. Mm. Remember when we went and walked around that Volvo junkyard?
Yes. It's amazing.
Rainbow Larry, shout out.
It's true.
He's an interesting character that lives just down the street from us and has probably 300 Volvos parked in his backfield, but he also is like an amazing mechanic and can fix all of them, ranging from 1927 to 2024, probably.
Yeah, he's probably the only person that I would buy a Volvo from.
It's always fun to see his Craigslist listings come up. Yeah. It's like, low mileage Volvo, 300,000 miles.
Yes, we love it. But I mean, hey, that says something. Somebody who's like been around Volvos that long and fixing them, if he's like, yeah, this thing's ready to roll, like you're good to go and it's got 300,000 miles on it, you know, obviously the engineering was there. So
right.
Yeah.
I think he had the opportunity to work on like the million mile Volvo, like the first one or something.
It's probably his.
Probably.
Wouldn't put it past him.
Good dude. April 14th, 2018, the Jeep Grand Cherokee Trackhawk debuts. It features a 6.2-liter supercharged Hemi V8 that makes 707 horsepower. Production would last through 2021. Why did they make this, Jordan?
Because they were all huddled around in the engineering room, and they thought, there's a man somewhere in Washington State. His name is Jordan. His last name is Stead. And we need to design his dream vehicle that checks all of the boxes and does everything he would ever need a vehicle to do. And that's when the Trackhawk was born. And to this day, I'm telling you right now, if there was a vehicle that checked every box for me,
this is it.
Oh, I've always loved
Mr. Audi.
Yeah, I know. But I mean, it's kind of similar, right? It's this brutish, like family hauler style vehicle.
True.
Sounds fucking amazing. Looks cool.
All the wheels spin,
although kind of not, because it's all-wheel drive, so the launches are crazy hard, incredibly overpowered. Sounds cool, luxurious. It's kind of got like a German luxury brutality to it in a way.
True. I mean, 2018, I think that, well, Chrysler was mostly European owned at that point anyway, so it's, they're definitely inspired. That's interesting.
I love them so much. They're so cool to me. It's definitely the coolest vehicle that features that engine for me.
And it's not the only one, and you can rent one locally, and I think that we need to do this.
You mean not a Trackhawk,
but you said the engine.
Yes.
And there's a
Ram TRX.
Ram TRX, that's what it is. That has that same engine. But you were telling me that it's altered in some way?
Yeah, I think it can handle, or it, I don't know if it can handle more power, but it's a newer engine. I think it puts out more power. And yeah, the TRX is pretty crazy. But to me, look, two hot takes in one episode here. I talk about this with my wife all the time. If we had to choose between an SUV or a truck for an all-encompassing vehicle, I'm team SUV, or at least a long SUV.
Where are you going to put your tall Armor?
Exactly. I think this is the problem, right? With an SUV, you could put a whole bed or a huge, you know, thing that you're carrying in an SUV, and it starts raining and you're fine, right?
Right.
And you've got that vertical space inside the car. A truck of the same size with an open bed, you now have the division in the middle of it, which means you can't carry something as long or as big. And you then are using a canopy. Just
put the tailgate down.
Yeah, just all your shit comes out. But like, I'm hugely team SUV over team truck. Like, don't get me wrong, I like trucks, and maybe I'll own one day. But to me, if you were to compare the TRX versus the Trackhawk all day, every day until death, 100%.
I think that we need to go rent this TRX that's on Turo. Shout out Turo. Turo sponsor us. And we'll see if we can change your mind a little bit. I'm not disagreeing with you on the truck versus the SUV thing. I do think that each serves its individual purpose. Yeah. I have a little Chevy S10 from 2003 that hauls a lot of dirt. And like, I'm not going to put a bucket full of dirt in, you know, in the back of an SUV.
Hey man, just put a tarp in your SUV, man. Put the seats down.
Just like the loading process, the unloading process. It seems a little trickier. I don't know. Maybe they got the tools for it these days, but
GMC Typhoon.
Are you going to haul some dirt in that?
Yeah, man. A whole ass in that, dude.
Yeah, there you go. Dirty ass.
That's right.
All right. April 15th, 1964. Gail Wise, a 22-year-old school teacher from Chicago, becomes the first person to purchase the brand new Ford Mustang.
Hey, nice job, Gail.
She got it 2 days before the official on-sale date for the Mustang. She pulled it off by just like happening to go into a dealership that had taken delivery of a light blue convertible. And she had mentioned the kind of car that she was looking for. And the salesman just took her to the little showroom that was not supposed to be displayed. And she walked out of there. She drove out of there.
Yeah.
In the very first Mustang to ever be sold. Interesting enough, she still has it to this day.
Wow. Listen, if you're another podcast that's listening to this podcast, don't take this idea, but I just had a great idea. We got to get Gail on here.
It's crossed my mind, for sure.
That would be amazing.
Yeah.
Also,
I'm gonna call her
how
tomorrow.
The fuck did a 22-year-old school teacher buy a brand new Mustang?
Inflation's a bitch.
Yeah, I guess.
If you look at the original prices of a Mustang, I think it was something like $3,500 in 1964 when it came out.
Nice.
And that's the equivalent of like $19,000 now or something.
Yeah.
So things haven't exactly stayed on pace.
Yeah. Yeah.
Here's something that's not a Mustang. April 15th, 2022.
Could be anything. Who knows what he's going to say?
The Volkswagen ID. Buzz makes its North American Eurospec production debut. Yes, that is very specific, but that is what happened at the New York Auto Show on April 15th, 2022. I am in love with this van. I am not going to lie. I grew up a Volkswagen person in a Volkswagen family. It is just like the remake of the original Volkswagen van. Give me one.
I think you are not the only one to say this. I think they did a great job with it. It looks awesome. The specking is right. I also was reading somewhere, don't quote me, but recently I saw that there's going to be like the performance version of a number of VW electric vehicles, and the ID. Buzz is included.
I'm sure. And I can't wait to see what they do with it.
Yeah.
I also think that they are only doing the 7-passenger one in the US.
Yeah.
That's not a Euro option.
I love that though.
Totally.
If you're going to buy it, get this, you know, you haul all the ass.
Bring all my friends.
Yeah, totally.
Putting 12 dogs in there.
Yeah.
On the next episode, we'll do a hot take of top 5 dog cars.
Oof, love it. I'm here for it.
At the same show, at the New York Auto Show, Chrysler debuted the Chrysler Airflow, which stole its name from a 1930s car, and it's Chrysler's new all-electric model, which is set to debut supposedly in 2025. The original Chrysler Airflow was a complete flop, so it's interesting that they would take that name, and I'm really curious to see how this one will land.
What kind of silhouette was it? Like, what kind of car, what was the style?
It's like an SUV.
Oh, okay.
And it's got suicide doors.
Whoa.
At least the concept did.
Okay.
Yeah, which the original Airflow did. So I think that's pretty much the only parallel between the two.
Honestly, I don't think it's far off to say that if it does debut now as an electric SUV, it will far outsell the original.
I would hope so. I mean, there's definitely options now in terms of like electric cars, electric SUVs. You know, Rivian just came out with their next generation lineup.
Yeah,
which
baby.
I'm very excited about.
R3X, let's do it.
Ooh, give it to me. However, like the Chevy Bolt EUV, which was among the best-selling electric SUV cars, just was discontinued, which I find interesting.
Would you call it an SUV? You think it was so small.
They called it the EUV.
EUV, okay.
Electric utility vehicle.
Okay.
Yeah, maybe more of a crossover, I guess.
The thought was there for me. Almost bought one, and then I don't know. Kind of wish that I would have bought one of those early electric cars that had like 80 miles of range for like $9,000 and then just drove it around town for years and years and years, got my money's worth, and it exploded into a huge explosion exploded into a huge mushroom cloud. And then I'd never have to think about it again, but it got me around town for free for X amount of years. Would have been pretty awesome.
Yeah. Well, it was interesting when we saw like the golf cart driving around earlier. It's like, why don't we just drive golf carts around town?
I mean, we could.
We should.
Yeah.
That kind of does it for the automotive history portion of this episode, but we got some fan mail, Jordan.
Ooh, let's go. All right, we got people listening to this joint.
People are listening, and we are thrilled by it. I'm going to read this verbatim so I don't miss a word from our friend, Chris Fernandez, who wrote in to say, "Now that I've almost caught up, I thought I'd give you some feedback." We always appreciate feedback. "Hopefully this leads to an audience question and comments section." Look at this.
We're doing that. Boom. My man.
Chris, you already win.
You did it.
He goes on to say, "Really love the show." I'm going to emphasize that. Really love the show.
So much that he and everyone he knew hit share and told all their friends and family and enemies about the show.
Truth. He did that over and over, and he's still doing it. He's actually just at his computer hitting share.
Yeah, and he's also just hitting the Venmo, too, every day, like a grand a day.
At Automotive History.
Yeah.
He goes on to say, number one, in quotes, "Cars will be so boring in 5 years," and I believe he's quoting you, Jordan.
Deny it.
"You guys aren't old enough to remember guys saying in the 70s that emissions are going to destroy cars. I heard this right through the 80s and 90s, especially at the speed shops. But I look around and cars are faster and cooler no matter if you buy a 5-year-old GTI or a new Mustang. And don't get me started on the immediate torque of the electric cars, which have only just started developing." Thoughts? Yeah, I do have a couple of thoughts. He's actually spot on this. I feel like everybody just is going to be critical of whatever is current and new. And it's true that everything is faster and quicker, safer, and maybe a little more boring in the design department from certain perspectives.
Unless it's Genesis Magma.
But he's right. People just say over and over and over, cars are slow, cars are boring. But the reality is they are fast.
It's true. Although I think the context of this was that everything's going to go electric.
Right. Well, he mentions that in like the immediate torque of the electric cars. I will say that cars are quick, not fast.
Yeah. No, you're totally right. Yeah. I can't argue. Although I am I fear a world of all electric cars, but also I think there's been a lot of hype about electric cars.
Well, that's what I mean when I say they're quick but not fast. Like that torque is like they're quick off the line, but they like ultimately they're going to end up going the same speed as your.
It's also a one trick pony. I mean, like how many times are you going to floor it and feel the torque and be like, cool. Truth. You know, there's like so much more dynamic elements of driving an ICE vehicle, especially if you're driving a manual or whatever else, or turbo or supercharged. There's such a different character for all these things.
Well, you look at Ken Block, rest in peace. He built that car, the electric car, Audi, or was it
e-tron? Or was it e-tron?
Yeah,
or
right. Yeah, and like they designed it to like have that, like to be able to shift and to burn rubber and to like do all these things. And it's like, okay, bring that to market.
Yep.
Chris goes on to say, I have lots of Euro experience. I thought you guys might appreciate my work photofolio. And he sent us some pictures of the cars that he works on. There's Porsches and Ferraris and a lot of things. So,
and it's Car Care by Chris, by the way.
Car Care by Chris.
Give it a Google. Check out his work. Chris, thank you for the note, man. This is awesome. You are officially the first fan mail, reader mail, listener mail. Whoop, whoop. Maybe, I don't know, enemy mail. I don't know what it is. We appreciate the mail.
Yeah.
Thank you so much. Please be like Chris. Send us notes. Contact at carsandcopymedia.com. Send us all the notes. Spam us on Instagram. Spam us wherever. And we'd love to feature some letters and just hear from you guys. It's been really cool to get this first note from Chris. So we appreciate you, man. Thank you for listening.
We're here for him.
Yeah. Also, he goes on to mention, how about an auto book piece every now and then? Right now I'm reading Crash Course, The American Automobile Industry's Road from Glory to Disaster. Keep it coming and I'll spread the word, says Chris. I'll have to check that out.
I will have to check it out. The last automotive book that I read, I'm currently reading a book about Crazy Horse, and it's amazing, his biography. But the last automotive book I read was Small Wonder, which is the history of Volkswagen.
Oh, that's cool.
Yeah, it's a solid piece. Cool, dude.
What an episode.
This is solid.
Yeah, we covered a lot of ground in this.
Yeah.
I'm psyched on the new format. Let us know if you are. It feels good to kind of break up what we've been doing the last 8-something episodes. We're learning, we're growing, we're trying things. You know, if it sucks, tell us. If you have other ideas on how to mix up the show, holler at us. But we've got a very deep list of ideas of things coming up next and ways we're going to keep things interesting for you. So coming up next episode or very soon, we might dive in a little bit on those in-house performance houses for various car manufacturers. TBD on when, but it's coming up. We got some other stuff cooking for you guys. So I appreciate it. Thanks for listening. And take them away, Brian.
Drive history. Never
wait, so. Yeah. That's the line.
Yeah. It's caught off guard. It's like, oh my God. Yeah. What are we doing next week? Drive history every day. We'll see you next week.
Bye.